All right, everybody. Hello and welcome back. I told my guests before we started going live that it's just like a couple more days and then I'll be down in Florida for the week. But fear not, there will be three podcasts for you guys next week. I'm going to do one more stream this week, but three podcasts next week with a couple interesting guests. I think I'm airing one show that I did recently. And then I got two guests, one returning guest, and then one guest I've never had on before. So look forward to that. But before we jump into what we're going to talk about today, I think, it's going to be a really, really cool conversation. I've been looking forward to setting this up for quite a while. Make sure you have all the links below where you can find my guests, myself, all the supplement stuff, tigerfitness.com through the links below, deemed fit for clothing and all that good stuff to let them know that you support the Metovic family and them. And, Fox and Sons Coffee, use code Kyle at checkout to let them know that I sent you their way. We're going to be talking about foreign policy, RFK, the Libertarian Party, lots of stuff. And I think it's going to be pretty interesting. I met this guy back at the anti-war rally about 2 years ago, and he's just an incredible guy. And I had his co-host on from the Convo Couch a couple weeks ago, and it was a really cool conversation. So make sure you go check that out. Make sure you go check out his channel. And without further ado, let's rock and roll. And today on the show, my dear friend, Craig Pasajardula. How you doing, brother?
What's going on, Kyle? Long time, no talk, and desperately needed and desperately overdue. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, of course. Well, I'm honored to have you here. So why don't you let the audience know who you are, what you do, just in case there's the few of them that aren't familiar with you.
Well, thank you so much. I'm sure there's plenty that aren't familiar with me, but thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk to your audience. My name is... Craig Pasajardula. Yes, the nickname is Pasta. I put it in the middle there. It's something that's made up. And I'm an Italian boy from New York, grew up in South Florida, was in the restaurant business for many, many years, started in the kitchen with my old man, worked my way to the front of the house. I'm a big time foodie. If you check out some of my Instagrams or my tweets, sometimes when I put them up, I'll throw up some of the food I make. I love to eat. I got involved with this with Fiorella Isabel about 2017, I think it was, when we started our channel. It's getting up there. We were in the Bernie Sanders movement together, and we saw how terrible the mainstream media was and how all these grassroots candidates couldn't break through. Plus, we were foreign policy wonks, so we said, why don't we just start our own show? We didn't think anything of it. We'd be doing it for quite a while. We were just kind of saying, let's give it a shot, and let's do our duty, you know, as journalists, like the Fourth Estate. The mainstream media is not doing their job. In fact, they're propagandists, and we said, we're gonna fill that void. So we thought we can educate a lot of our friends on foreign policy and that we would give grassroots candidates a chance to interview that never got a chance to get on TV because there were so many. That was when we had the pipe dreams, Kyle. Remember, we're going to take over the Democratic Party, the Bernie Sanders movement. Yeah. Good luck to you Trumpers trying to do that thing, too, as well. But, I mean, that's what it was all about. I started this show and then, you know, certain things have happened. You know, I was able to fill in for Jimmy Dore for about 4.5 months. I occasionally fill in for Kim Iverson when I get a chance. I've got to stand on stage with all of them, including a lot of libertarians at the Rage Against the War Machine rally where we met. And, you know, we had a great time. We had a bunch of leftists and libertarians in a room together. It was something we experienced, me, the Jackman brothers, and Reed Coverdale when I was covering Tulsi Gabbard's campaign in 2020. So I'm one of those leftists who's been pushing the unity between the leftists and the libertarians. I covered the convention this year in Washington, D.C., saw the anointing of Chase Oliver and Mike Termat, watched all the debates, had questions with Thomas Massey. And for doing so, I got to meet a great guy like yourself and other people and been trying to do shows and stay in contact with them to this day. I have my own show called Pasta to Go, which I'm still doing. I also throw a lot of food stuff up there, including my documentary I made about Hawaii, 100 days out from the fire. It's up on Pasta2Go, the number 2, and go, one word, Pasta2Go, and that's the crux of where we're at today. So
nice, man. Yeah, that's awesome. And you know what? I probably should have figured you did some food stuff, but I didn't know the history of you working in New York. That's awesome stuff, man. But yeah, you know, when we met at the anti-war rally, I wasn't really familiar with like the anti-war left. And I got to say, over the last 2 years, it's become a faction that I've become very, 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 very fond of, because I find that, much like myself, you guys are allowed and you're not afraid to criticize anybody. And those are the people that I'm looking for, is the people who are not afraid to tell the truth no matter what. The people who say, you know, we're not going to fucking play politics here. If Trump did something fucked up on foreign policy, we call him on it. If Biden did something fucked up on foreign policy, we call him on it. And right now, and we're going to get into this, I'm sure, I see a lot of people in our world that are saying, well, Trump's a lesser of two evils here, and, you know, he's good on foreign policy, and then you just omit everything that's bad about them. And I'm sure there's some people on the left, actually, I know there are some people on the left who are looking at Kamala Harris saying, oh, well, you know, she's better than Biden on Israel or something like that. And it's like, no, you guys are so far off the reserve. And it seems like the anti-war left and not the anti-war right seems to be pretty comfortable in the same position that I find myself in. I consider myself a pretty right-wing libertarian. But like I said, I've grown very, very fond of the anti-war left just because of how consistent they are on the wars of foreign or on foreign policy issues.
Yeah. And the anti-war left, the common sense left, is what some of the conservatives called me when I was one of the speakers at Defeat the Mandates, right? Mm-hmm. Literally, that's, they would introduce me. This is Pastor Jarduli. He's a common sense leftist. And it was all of us on One Change, Max Blumenthal, Kim Iverson, me, Jimmy okay. Dore. We were the leftists that were participating in an event, which mostly had a lot of conservatives, you know, had a lot of doctors too, but as well, those doctors were conservative leaning, or at least kind of, you know, a lot of them, the same in that movement, in the Defeat the Mandates movement, have been silent or spoken in favor of the Zionist country, Israel, right? Mm-hmm. The common sense leftists, the anti-imperialist left, tend to be not willing to play any of the culture war BS, right? Mm-hmm. We don't want to get involved with that. We mostly look at the economics. We look at our foreign policy. We don't get involved with a lot of the culture war issues or the identity politics. In fact, we think it could be cancerous at times. And that's why we do find this kind of, you know, common sense ground with the populist right or the libertarian right. It's kind of funny because I think the anti-war populist left, the ones you're talking about, they really are like leftist libertarians. They literally, yeah. You know, I've been in that party. I've talked to people and we're both anti-interventionist. We don't want to get involved with wars. We got that Ron Paul mentality, understanding mm-hmm. that there's blowback. And, yeah. You know, I think there's a misconception that libertarians just don't want to get involved for fiscal reasons, but they have a heart too. They're very compassionate. Mm-hmm. I met a lot of people. They don't want to see people and kids getting killed. We were both for Julian Assange, right? Like, I have a free Ross sign somewhere around here that I got mm-hmm. from the convention from Martha Bueno from the Free Ross Holbrook, and I understood that and knew that. But they're also about freeing Julian Assange and freeing Edward Snowden. And they also believe in a freedom of the press. So, I mean, it's just, you know, their civil liberties are strong, anti-imperialist leftists. We understand our civil liberties are very important. And a lot of us have learned far too much this last year or two that, you know, our freedom of speech means more than anything. It's the most important thing we have. It doesn't make a difference what area or what issue or crisis you think is the most important. Without freedom of speech and the freedom of ideas, we are screwed. So I think a lot of leftist, anti-imperialist leftists are leftist libertarians. We'll probably bump heads and say we don't agree on the economics part, but hey, right now, I think that's one of the least of our worries. However, we do have to get it straight. And I think there's a lot of common sense math when it comes to, you know, the Austrian economics and all that stuff. However, I don't understand why a lot of libertarians on the right can't agree that central planning could work and we can play nice in the sandbox together and build things together as a nation and have great projects and work together to make sure the most vulnerable and our society are taken care of.
Yeah, I think where the right-wing libertarians such as myself would kind of, I don't want to say agree nor disagree, but would kind of complement what you're saying, is that we believe it should be done through voluntary charity. And I had a little bit of a black pill, if you will, yesterday. My drummer, my band, A Common Crown, he's been running a charity for the last 25 years. And some people you'll kind of notice they want all the social clout of saying that they give to charity and they'll put on these events. But then when it comes to actually signing the check to send it over to the charity, that's when they're like, oh, I'll get it to you eventually. And then they do, but sometimes it takes time. And sometimes you see the uglier side of charities where people aren't always as willing to give. But I do believe that people generally are good enough in themselves and in their communities that they're willing to step up if somebody truly has fallen on hard times. And I've seen that in my personal life. I've put on two events where I gave thousands of dollars to women in need who had breast cancer and, you know, couldn't afford their treatments or, you know, copays or something like that. That's where I think kind of like the leftist libertarians and maybe more the more right libertarians would disagree, is like in the economic factors that we would see central planning is tending to be inefficient and not as capable as perhaps like a more free market solution where you have voluntary communities that come together to do things like that. So, and I don't think you would even disagree with any of that, but kind of curious your thoughts there.
Yeah, I mean, I just to say, how will we be able to get things done in a voluntary society for the most in need, right? The most vulnerable, where the money just isn't necessarily there. You know, what kind of bridge would they build in these small, poor communities? I think there are ways for people to get involved to get things done, like don't like have rich people wanting to donate and say, hey, we'll name the bridge after you or do something. Like, I think there's ways where we can find a way to take some of the burden off the government. But, you know, the central planning, as far as, you know, being able to lift people out of poverty and get stuff done, it's very hard to argue that, especially when you want to have a high speed rail go across part of the United States. It seems almost possible to get that done in a voluntary, you know, kind of system. But, you know, like I said, these are the least of our problems. The thing is, I think that where libertarians are sometimes people are they don't get it right about libertarians. What's the word? They're misunderstood, right? Mm-hmm. Or misquoted is the fact that they think that they want everything privatized and believe in capitalism because they want to enrich themselves. No, you know, when you allow a government to continue to do too much and too many things, you know, the human element seeps in and then the government has complete control of everything. Now, that's not necessarily called communism. And I think that's where probably speaking to my business partner before, you'll see the big difference. She's an anarcho-communist, right? She wants to one day get to a society in which it is a voluntary society, a panacea of sorts, right? Which the libertarians love to make fun of. But, you know, I mean, I make fun of the libertarians, too, as well. I said libertarian economics. It's like having a professional football game, taking the referees out and think it's going to work. Nah, sorry. You know, business can never regulate itself. Mm-hmm. We have to find a way. The human element's going to seep in, whether it's the government doing it or the private industry doing it. So, I mean, it is a, you know, an area of misconception. But I do also want to point out while we're having this conversation, and I know it's your show and I'm not meaning to drive the bus.
No, it's okay. Yeah.
I found out from a guy who I assumed was a libertarian, and he said he's not. He's part of the Liberty Movement, somebody big. And he kind of, you know, sent a message to me, oh, he's not in the Libertarian Party. And I was kind of confused about that. Mm-hmm. I know why from what we're witnessing this whole time since the breaking of the Libertarian Convention to what's going on right now. And I'll say it right now on your show, Kyle. Right. I'm not going to mention names. There are people out there that won't return my calls anymore. Libertarians that when I saw them at the convention and we shook hands and like, hey, man, I hope that I'm doing a good job bringing over some of the leftists that I think can work together with your ideology. We won't reach an area in, economics where we're going to agree. But right now we're at DEFCON 4. You know, that doomsday clock is getting closer to midnight. And it's you libertarians in this room, along with us anti-imperialist leftists. And that's what the Rage Against the War Machine was all about. Right, you got this is the bond we need. Some of those guys now not returning phone calls. It's a little disturbing. I think they're avoiding me because they don't want to have tough questions about what's going on with their party right now because it is a hot mess.
When you see a certain an event planned back to back with a rally that you and I attended that I made a lot of good connections with sincerely good people, chief of them being you and Misty Winston would be the first two that come to mind immediately. You know, I have great affection for Misty. She's one of the most wonderful people out there who just promotes people selflessly who don't even agree with her 100%, but she's just goes out of her way to make sure that other people are lifted up. I just cannot express my love for people like that.
And how we met was awesome, right? We were in a room together.
Exactly.
I was like, you know, I was my Airbnb with the guys. And I'm like, hey, we got people from different areas. There was also people from Covert Magazine that were in there. Hardcore leftists were there. Bunch of libertarians. And we stood up. We went around the room. We introduced ourselves. We talked what we're all about. People from across the aisle, different ideologies. That's what it's about. Conversation. Getting to understand, knowing it's okay to work with, each other, because there's been a lot of cancel culture out there, which is the cancer right now of our society, because it's demonizing our neighbor and allowing the ruling class to let us fight each other while they run off with all the resources and goods.
Yeah, well, to see a event scheduled next about a week or two from now that no longer has any anti-imperialist leftists, but is jam-packed full of Zionists. Not just like people who are like, hey, yeah, we morally support Israel, but you know, we don't want to fund it. People who are to the T calling for the leveling of Gaza instead of more anti-imperial. And I'm not saying you can't have conservatives or people who disagree with this, but like to claim that you're going to rescue the Republic with people who explicitly are just crazed Zionists and talk about, you know, literal genocide of the Palestinians. And then the next day you have an anti-war rally and it's just, you know, you still have some Zionists there. I'm a little disappointed, and I gotta say this, what it looks like to me is basically making the best of a bad situation with Chase Oliver, who a lot of the Mises Caucus libertarians didn't really like. It seems like we're really throwing out a lot of credibility as the Libertarian Party and libertarians to basically give it to Trump, which I understand, but it seems like we're just kind of saying, all right, well, we're playing the game that everybody else plays. Well, he's a lesser of two evils, and he made some promises. Okay, he made some promises 8 years ago, and remember how he delivered on none of them? And we're supposed to believe it's going to be different this time. And he still hasn't distanced himself from a lot of these neocons in his original administration. I could rant about this for a fucking hour because it's very frustrating to see the direction of this stuff. Once again, not against talking to these people, but explicit Zionists and people who really shadily kind of stopped questioning Israel after they posed one question. Something's real fucking fishy there. And I'm guessing you're probably getting the same vibes.
All right. You hit so many things I want to talk about. Number one, I'd like to talk about Trump. Two, then we talk about the rally. Three, and if we could talk about the Libertarian Party. I know it's your show, but I have a lot to say.
No, please about go all ahead. That. You're here to speak it. So.
So I pulled out Against the Rage, Against the War Machine rally. And I also talked about my feelings about the Rescue of the Republic. It's all on the same weekend. Rage is on the Saturday. Rescue the Republic's on a Sunday. The Rescue of the Republic is a Trump rally. It's a unity rally. Brett Weinstein has said before, this is about voting out Team Blue, making sure that lesser of two evil argument, and vote for Donald Trump. So at the end of the day, you can say what it is. They put up all these pillars. And the first pillar is about war is... Is what is it? War is necessary only as the last means, but all everybody's okay. And this is your very first pillar right here. Everybody's okay with that Gaza war, right? Or you know, people who say, "Well, that person's not really okay with it," but they refuse to speak out on it. That's the same thing to me at this point. If you're silent, you're complicit. You're not going to sit there and say you're anti-war and not speak out of what's going on in Gaza on an everyday basis. By the way, if you have a beeper or a walkie-talkie, please put it further away from the screen right now so you don't get blown up. This latest thing that Israel has done. And, you know, Gerald Celente made the best tweet out there. He says that if the IDF can do that to your walkie-talkies or your beepers, whatever, your pagers, imagine what the NSA can do to your phone, your iPhone. I mean, this is terrible. And they're going to justify this type of, you know, behavior all the time. Innocent people killed as well again. And all these people want to just remain silent on it. And all of them. There's so many people. We haven't heard Russell Brand spoke out about it. We heard Matt Taibbi say he doesn't want to speak out about it. Brett Weinstein doesn't have a tweet up there talking out against the war itself. Nothing, nothing. And it's pro. And like I said, pro-Zionist, and it's all about Donald Trump. Okay. Donald Trump, the lesser of two evils. That's what these people are selling right now. We have to do this. Listen, I would usually make the argument that you are right because for so many years I voted, right, Democrat because of the lesser of two evils thing. I got duped into that thing. There's no such thing. You might see it as the lesser of two evils in certain areas. For instance, you might see censorship where Donald Trump won't be as bad as the Democrats who they won't
To put a pin in this real quick, I'm sorry to interrupt, but the idea that Trump is somehow free speech, I know he plays this up, but he signed the anti-BDS laws into into law in 2019. The right is not freaking they're not anti or they're not pro free speech. They're the ones pushing anti-BDS laws and laws against criticizing Israel. If you love Israel, that's fine. But we should be able to have a conversation about it without getting fined or thrown in jail. And that's what some of these people want.
Yeah. So, you know, it's great that you mentioned it, because I was just going to circle around to, he's not for freedom of speech. Neither are the Republicans. They're for freedom of speech for their own group. No, it's perfect that you mentioned it, because you talk about these anti-BDS laws and all those protests in the streets. He would shut them down in a heartbeat. He once again vilify them just the way he vilified all the Black Lives Matter protests. And I'm not saying they weren't bad people, mostly feds who snuck into the Black Lives Matter protest to start stuff. Yeah, of course, right? And there was a lot of people's anger and emotions that they took advantage of. He'll Absolutely. Do the same thing and shut it down. The Republicans historically have shut down Palestinian speech, Iranian speech, Chinese speech, so forth. Now, then you have the air as well. He's the lesser of two evils when it comes to war. And this is the part, Kyle, where I love a lot of the RFK people coming on over, going and trying, in the Tulsi people too, coming over and trying to rewrite Donald Trump's history. Well, he never started any new wars, but what about Yemen? What about him arming the Saudis to a T to go bomb Yemenese kids on a regular basis? What about Syria, where he says they're stealing the oil, taking their national resources, starving them out? Okay, what about Ukraine? He's like, he's going to wave a magic wand and end the war. He gave them weapons, the Ukrainian regime, the Azov battalion, in their hands, weapons that Barack Obama wouldn't even give them, okay? Mm-hmm. He armed the drones in Africa. He is not an anti-war person. For these people coming over and trying to rewrite history, he also let the INN treaty for the nuclear proliferation expire, wouldn't sign it with, you know, Russia. He presided over Minsk too. He didn't make sure that war ended. He didn't do anything. So to sit here and act like he's anti-war, and then you got Israel-Gaza. Right? Oh, my Lord. Now RFK and Tulsi want to talk to us about nuclear weapons and the harm and what it could do and what's going on. And if we don't get, you know, if we don't get Kamala out and get Trump in, it's the nuclear war situation is going to be worsened. He let the INF treaty expire. He didn't even care. He'll let Israel use nukes in a heartbeat. He won't even stop them. So this is ridiculous to try and sell the lesser of two argument, because that is the most important thing. That is why I showed up at the Libertarian Convention. We have to get out of the two-party illusion, because it ain't the two-party duopoly. It's a two-party illusion, right? It's one party, same donors, same Zionist control, with half our Congress having citizenship in Israel as well as the United States. No, this is what we cannot do. These people have to admit, and here's the thing too, Kyle. You never see Donald Trump going after the ruling class anymore. When's the last time you heard him say the deep state? He didn't say it on that stage the other day. Instead, he blames everything on immigrants. Immigrants, immigrants, immigrants. And he never brings up for one second, Kyle, why there's so much migration. It's American foreign intervention. This is something I talked about with Larry Sharp on his show. Well, I love the Libertarians. They understand. Even when me and Massey disagreed, Thomas Massey, when I caught him for a couple questions on why there's so much migration coming to the border, he says, you know, I still wouldn't have the CIA funded down there with their wars. I wouldn't be sanctioning these people, because sanctioning is an act of war. I wouldn't be doing any of this stuff that's driving people, you know, to have a weak country. And it's also hurting our dollar. This is why there's so much migration. Nobody talks about it. This whole buying in Donald Trump is the Bernie Sanders of the Republican Party. He exists just to walk you and sheep herd you back into that party. That rage, that rescue the Republic. No, we need to wreck the Republic. And anybody who's an anti-Zionist or anybody who's really anti-war should pull out of that thing in a heartbeat. There's a couple people I'd like to see pull out of that thing.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Charlie Kirk, Kyle.
Charlie Kirk.
We're gonna just put a Zion. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay, man, because I, as soon as I saw that, I'm like, you have Charlie Kirk, the guy who went on Patrick Bet-David, who's likely probably paid off by the Trump campaign to fucking blow him every chance he gets. He asked a question. He said, how did Israel fail at their security on October 7th? And then ever since then, he's all about, oh, we have to defend Israel. Israel's right to defend itself. And he won't say anything again. To me, that's too stark of a difference to ignore, where you went from, how do they have a security failure, to, oh my God, look at all this money they're sending to, checks notes, Gaza. Yeah, you know how much money we sent to Israel compared to Gaza? And there's right-wingers that are freaking out about the money that we send to the Taliban, which, well, I'm not saying we should be sending money anywhere, but like, hey, we could sit here and say, oh yeah, they sent this much to the Taliban, this much here, this much there. They sent this much to Ukraine. Rightfully so. You are right to be angry about this. But Israel is the biggest receiver of American taxpayer money. And they're the only country that doesn't have to register with FARA. They have speech laws here. If this was China, people would lose their ever goddamn minds. And that's the other thing, too, about Trump is that we're supposed to believe these lesser two evils. But I mean, he's, you know, always trying to blame China for everything. And it's either China or Iran, right? He says he's going to end the Ukrainian war by doing the exact same thing that got us there. Oh, I'm going to give him more weapons. And, yeah. You know, hey, we're going to have NATO fund more. Like, you're literally doing the exact same thing that started this war. And then we're going to get tough on China. Like, Joe Biden hasn't been tough on China, telling them that, hey, if you fuck around in the Philippines, we'll fucking blow your asses off the face of the planet. We're going to arm Australia. We're going to, double Japan's military budget. People are so fucking out to lunch on the foreign policy aspect. And I hate to say it, but like the libertarians are now basically just whole hog on the train for Trump. Once again, I understand if you want to make the argument for lesser of two evils, but don't fucking delude yourself to think that Trump's an anti-war candidate. This is the shit that drives me nuts. Be honest about it.
Well, the Libertarian Party, I'd like to get your opinions on that, because I said I'm going to probably be going and voting for Chase Oliver. And I don't like Chase Oliver. There's a lot of things I don't necessarily agree with him. Mag Termat, sometimes when he makes his little videos just bashing on socialism, it's like, we get you don't like socialism. You're a capitalist. But if you think that socialism is the biggest problem, first of all, you don't have to worry about saying it. There's a guy with a bigger megaphone named Donald Trump that's been saying it a lot more than you, Mike. Concentrate on something else. And I had Mike Termat on my show and played his audio on the WBAI channel in New York. I have a radio show I do once a week in New York City, in proper New York City, with FBI with FM bandwidth and stuff. So I put him on there because I'm trying to once again get that Libertarian Party out there. What I saw at that convention was a mechanism, right? An actual mechanism where grassroots candidates could come and win. Now, Chase Oliver wasn't the candidate of choice from the Mises Caucus, and the Mises Caucus dragged their legs. Dave Smith, right? He was supposed to run, didn't run. Then they throw this Mike Rechtenwall character forth that I didn't even know who he was until I got to the Libertarian Convention, because they'd done little to get him out there. And then he has his Joe Biden moment. He takes an edible before he gets on stage. He doesn't do well in the debate, and, you know, Chase wipes the floor with him in the debate. Chase won the debate. He was the most on point, the clearest answers. He was ready to rock and roll. He'd obviously been on the debate stage with Raphael Warnock in Atlanta when he ran for Senate over there and got a decent amount of votes. He campaigned in 50 states. So, yeah, the candidate who worked the hardest would win, and he won. And I knew it was going to be a disaster. But at the end of the day, as a libertarian, you got to realize that you might have lost this battle, but you didn't win the war. The Mises Caucus lost. Instead of freaking going out there and having a campaign saying how bad this guy sucks, they should have walked over to his hand, shook his hand, and done the process of starting repairing their relationship with the rest of the caucuses that hate them. Okay, you don't need to get everybody, but you need to get a few of them. And make sure you get a candidate moving forward. Right now, you got to protect your ballot access. And if you had an option, if it was really an option, if it would be Chase Oliver or Donald Trump in office, if you're a libertarian and you're not saying Chase Oliver, you're just friggin' delusional. You're just delusional at this point. I don't believe in necessarily his points of views, but his ideology is that of a libertarian. Free market forces, parents decide, all these things that are so important right now. Your ideology means more than anything and it means more than the candidate. It means more than all that stuff. You want to maintain ballot access moving forward, right? Get your shit together and start repairing the kinks in your armor and the problems in your party. Yes, I'm voting party over principles in certain cases, because I want those big principles that are so important to move forward. And right now, the Libertarian Party is the best vessel. And there are people in there that will never agree with me. Jeremy Kaufman will never agree with me. He doesn't want me in his party. He doesn't want me part of his clan. And I understand that. But there's a lot of people who are willing to say, okay, we have certain things we agree on. Let's open up this tent and let you in. Let's have these debates and these conversations about private property and about how the Fed works and stuff. But, you know, at the end of the day, when you get a leftist, a guy who is mostly a lifelong Democrat, coming in there and going, ah, I see it, man. I see it. I understand what you're talking about, the government. I get it. I understand what you mean by free market. We might. All right. I understand where you're coming from. Let's find a way to make this work. And come on. I mean, this party, I understand why that person who's a pretty big name said, I'm not in the Libertarian Party because of this stuff. It has its own party inner working crap that it needs to fix, and it needs to get it together quickly, because, you know, the next election, the next president election is 4 years away, and you're one good candidate away. You can get your ballot access. I mean, I don't care. I mean, like, let's just say, for argument's sake, Dave did run. Look at Dave showing up everywhere here and there. I mean, what he would do for the Liberty Movement, maybe you don't get a guy like him, but you get somebody like that. And there's avenues now. This was your opportunity to strike. You missed it. Don't miss the next one, because you're already headed in the wrong direction. Get your shit together.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And Dave would have been my guy as well. And after Dave decided to drop out, I got no issues with that. I think he probably should have did it a little bit sooner. And the Mises Caucus probably should have had a little bit more of a plan. But, you know, they really kind of fumbled the ball with this whole situation. And now, as I said, it's kind of basically, let's softly endorse Trump by saying, let's chase Biden out of office, right? Which I understand they're being reasonable. But, you know, from the Mises Caucus perspective, I've talked about this before, is that there's no real way to look at the Libertarian Party from their perspective as any kind of success at this point. The Mises Caucus takeover has been a complete and total failure if you end up with somebody like Chase Oliver, who I understand that he probably does have a lot of theory and stuff, right? But like the social views and stuff like that are a little bit of a deal breaker for me. I'm staying home this year. It's sad, but once again, from their perspective, they said that we're pushing these kind of people out of the party. And I think they really pushed out a lot of like the grassroots workers, the people who were willing to kind of keep the party infrastructure going. They pushed them all out with people who just want to, you know, talk shit on Twitter, which, hey, that's fine. I like to do that stuff too. But you have to have the people who are actually willing to go in and do some footwork and kind of do the boring shit that nobody likes to do. And one thing that I've noticed is that a bomb ass Twitter presence means absolutely diddly fuck for an electoral outcome and what it means to actually get people on the ground and kind of making things happen in the real world. It looks cool on Twitter, but it means zero in the real world. And I think a lot of people in our space kind of miss that connection there.
I think you need a little bit of both. You know what I'm saying? I believe that you can get some stuff out on Twitter, get your eyes on you, but you got to get more bodies out in the streets. Listen, this would have been perfect. You know, I'm really upset that Spike didn't run. I think this was Spike's turn. I think it was Spike's time. I think they need a guy who's going to bring the party together, and that is a guy like Spike. You know, he's not necessarily a Mises guy, but he's liked by everybody. Me and Spike had differences. He comes right up to me to talk to, you know, to talk to me. He just understands, you know, he can take a blow. He can take a comment. He doesn't get too emotional about stuff. He spoke at the Libertarian Convention right before I left. And, you know, I thought it was his time. A Spike Maj ticket would have been really what the doctor ordered. If you weren't going to come up with Dave, somebody should have went and got Spike and said, Spike Maj, let's try to get this across the finish line. Let's push this. You know, you need people who can talk to others across the aisle. And what Maj has done for that party and bringing some people in, you know, black guns matter, how important, how big it is. And libertarians, obviously, to think for themselves, people to start thinking for themselves. That's what the libertarian mindset and ideology does sometimes. It lets you think for yourself, right? It encourages that. Not this group think that the both, you know, two parties, the duopoly, the two-party illusion, not their mindset. So, you know, it is a shame with this Rescue the Republic and even Rage. I wouldn't go in Rage because I thought, you know, Keith Bowling is the MC and he's a pro hardcore Trump guy. I'm not going to participate in sheepdogging people back into the duopoly. You know, I just find something wrong with that. And a lot of those libertarians going to vote for Trump, man. Wow. Holy cow. I'm not even a libertarian. Why I got to act more libertarian than them? Get your shit together. No reason whatsoever. This is why the people who were there upset at that convention that Trump was even speaking, this is the thing they're talking about. People buying into it, the organizing, all that stuff. Get out of it. Go right now. Libertarian, you're all about non-interventionists. You're all about the party of Ron Paul now. Be the party of Ron Paul. Yeah.
Lowe's knows you've got a job to do, and we help get it done. With the MyLowe's Pro Rewards program, eligible members save more. With volume discounts on qualifying orders through a quote of $2,000 or more. Join for free today. Lowe's, we help you save. Offer can't be combined with any other discount, contract, and or special pricing. Exclusions, more terms, and restrictions apply. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Yeah, so, you know, I don't think I really talked to anybody that was at the convention, but I'm kind of curious your opinion. I feel like people probably should have been a little bit more patient when it came to Trump speaking, because I thought there was a real opportunity there to kind of at least voice libertarian issues or push them more into the conversation, because everybody was focused on Donald Trump being at the libertarian event. You know, I feel like people probably should have heard him out, heard what he was going to say. I don't believe a single fucking word that he's saying. I know people, for some reason, it feels like we're just like constantly reliving the same fucking election cycle over and over again, because when Trump campaigned in 2016, failed to deliver on a bunch of promises. Campaigned in 2020, failed on a bunch of promises. Now it's 2024. This is his third presidential run, and people are like, he's going to release the JFK files. I'm like, yeah, you remember when he said that like almost 10 years ago now, and he still hasn't done it? I feel like there was a lot of missed opportunities there, for better or for worse. And like I said, it does just seem like we're kind of saying, well, fuck it, for Trump now. And I understand the argument of lesser two evils, but you know, I think what you're saying about this libertarian and anti-interventionist alliance is very, very, very important. And I mean, I have conversations with everybody, hard right wingers that, you know, love Franco and Reed Burnham, or what the fuck is his name? Mencius Moldbug, all those guys, love those people dearly. I have a conversation with you right now, Savvy Sabs, the guys from the Revolutionary Blackout Network. But I do think, much to your point, that the anti-interventionist stuff is the most important. If you want to solve immigration, let's start with foreign policy. If you want to solve a lot of the financial issues, let's start with foreign policy. And we can talk about entitlements. That's a big thing of the budget as well. But like, the foreign policy stuff is, for me, front and center. And this is kind of why I spend a lot of my time talking to people like you, anti-war leftists, and then obviously my main guys kind of in the liberty movement, if you will, the guys from antiwar.com and the Libertarian Institute.
Yeah. I love Kyle. I love me some Kyle Anzalone. That's my boy over there. I met him at Freedom Fest. He's just amazing. Met David Camp at Rage Against the War Machine. Read anti-war all the time. Scott Horton was the first to congratulate me coming off the stage of Rage Against the War Machine. I bought him some Dr. Pepper cotton candy.
That sounds right.
On the show, you know, we had disagreements because he goes right into his, you know, hating on Mao and Stalin stuff, and we're like, all right, let's just stop. And you know, once again, for me, it's not that I really like those guys more than anything. I just don't want to fall for the, you know, the oldest trick in the book, which is pit the capitalists against the communists so the people fight each other, right? I don't believe isms are problems. I believe it's ruling class and stuff. But I mean, you know, when we were talking about so much about talking about all those people and why it's so, so important, the anti-imperialist leftists, you know, I like to see a party come out where it is maybe some anti-imperialist leftists and libertarians, something like that. I don't know if that could exist. We know it can't exist anymore in the Democratic Party. You know, I'm hoping that it could come out. Something can come out of the libertarian party like that, where you have leftist libertarians. There certainly are leftist libertarians.
Yeah.
And that was the thing when Donald Trump was speaking and people were yelling and screaming, you know, at least it had nuance behind why they were upset. And yeah, they could have done that a little bit less. There was a group of people who did, because they were disgusted that he was there, because there's been a history of people peddling Republicans, libertarians on the right to vote for Republicans. You know what I'm saying? There are ex-libertarians that left and are recruiting libertarian-minded Republicans, you know, for the Republican Party, not the Libertarian Party. And it also would have helped because there was a lot of Trump people there that just went to see Donald Trump.
Right.
I swear to God, somebody saw a sign that said Free Ross, and they're like, I didn't know Ross Perot was need to be freed. I'm like, it's not Ross Perot. It's not Ross Perot. It's Ross Ulbricht. Let's talk about it. Let's learn about it. Let's learn more about what the libertarians are about. I thought it was genius for Angela to book those people because the eyes went on the Libertarian Party, but it required a follow-up, and there's been no follow-up. There's been a flop. There's been a capitulation to Donald Trump. So now it even looks worse, the fact that you had him there rather than going your own way, because I spoke to a bunch of delegates, libertarian delegates, as they walked out of that speech. What'd you think about it? What do you think about it? You know, he's awesome. Would you ever vote for him? Hell no. Same thing with RFK. Would you think he had some good things to say? Would you ever vote for him? Hell no. Israel, right? Israel. Israel, they'll never vote for this guy because of Israel. They'll never vote for Donald Trump because of other reasons, because they understand his foreign policy. And I think a lot of libertarians remember. I think this time, did he go back to $100 fine for burning the American flag, or does he want to lock you up or something? I think for burning the American, the libertarians remember that stuff. So yeah, I mean, it could have been played better. There could have been better building of bridges, but you know, like I say, at the end of the day, especially at a Libertarian convention, you understand what the Libertarians about, what they don't like. And I'm glad, because I know there was a lot of people in that room that would never vote for Donald Trump. And seeing some of the Libertarian leaders now capitulate to Donald Trump. I know we're ending almost every segment with the same thing. It's just so sad, right? It's just like,
yeah,
man, what's going on?
Okay, well, you know what? I think I saw you and Misty kind of going back and forth about RFK, because I know you were kind of optimistic about RFK. And honestly, it was kind of funny. I had Connor Freeman on the show. This is probably a year and a half back. And me and he's one of my best buddies in this whole movement. And we were glowing with praise for RFK because he was the first of the big three candidates that was saying, I don't want to fight a war with China. And like, holy hell, where has this been? Like, all I'm asking for is a candidate that's anti-war, right? And we really don't have anybody, you know, that's seriously polling in that respect. That is that. RFK seemed like he was that guy for a little bit. And then I think it was literally the day after I aired that podcast, someone called him an anti-Semite or something like that, because that was when he was at a dinner and he was talking about people's genetics and how COVID would affect them. And they called him an anti-Semite for it. And right in that instant, he bent into a freaking cardboard, you know, a flat cardboard box at that point, and just could not bend over backwards enough to say how much of a Zionist he was. Right then and there is when I knew, oh, this dude ain't got it. And now you see him. He had all these correct, 100% correct criticisms of Donald Trump. And what'd he do? Kiss the ring. And he's completely stopped making those criticisms. So what are your thoughts on that and this whole Tulsi, RFK, Trump alliance?
Well, so just so we know for the record, I was excited about RFK talking about, you know, all his old lawsuits going after a lot of the agencies, understanding how the money involved and the manipulation from the congressional members and how they can get laws passed and how the FDA works, the EPA. I was excited to hear talks about, obviously, COVID, his stance there. I mean, in the very, very, very beginning, he might have been a little bit off, but he got there quickly. You know, his speech at Defeat the Mandates in D.C. was amazing. Me, Fiorella were there to witness it. I wanted him to talk about SSRIs and how so many of these mass shootings, all these hallucinogenic drugs and all these other, you know, benzos and opioids and all these things, how they affect the human body and how they're being, you know, they're littering our children's minds. And, you know, we talk about this last assassination attempt. We can also talk about how SSRIs played into play. I was eager to talk about actual good conversations about clean water, oil, all those particular situations. It was me who went up way before October 7th, and it was the day after, a couple days after, he had put up tweets from Roger Waters and took them down. And I asked him what his stance on Israel and Palestine was in the great state of New Hampshire, as he was there at the time, still a Democrat, telling the Democrats to not move their date on their primary to leave put no matter what the DNC told them. I'm the one who asked him that, and that opened up the can of shitworms. And then all of a sudden, you know, Glenn Greenwald was going after him for it. Max Blumenthal was on the Hill going, it opened up the door. It was me who did it, in fact, okay? That was a mistake that I played. I'm paying for dearly, I should say. It was a mistake I made. Not a mistake, I played. I played the wrong cards. I didn't realize he'd be such a raving, crazy Zionist to the point where you're saying, this guy is compromised. He's not getting this wrong. He is compromised. He's right. Bending the knee to Israel. I thought at least after October 7th, and that's the day I was like, sayonara. And a lot of people I know were like, on October 7th, that's the moment when they're like, sorry, RFK, we're walking away. We're not going to stay. You are not anti-war. You can't separate the two. We thought at the very least you were saying, it's one thing to say Israel has the right to exist, which a lot of people feel they do not, right? And I always say whether they do have the right to exist, whether they don't have the right to exist, they're not leaving. We got to find a solution. We got to pick this up and move forward with where we're at right now. I mean, Israel's, they're making their own bed now so they can sleep and they can deal with it. You know, there's a lot of sense to when Norman Finkelstein says the only right an Israeli has is to pack up their suitcase and leave. There's a lot of nuance behind that, and everybody knows about the Nakba and 45 who's been paying attention, especially if you watch the guys at anti-war. But when RFK went that deep in the hole, I said no way, and a lot of people said no way there, and they walked away. It was one of those things that I should have never ever compromised my values on and turned a blind eye on the Palestinians, because October 7th, if October 7th never happened, right? And we were kind of in this position where we weren't talking about Israel as much. We would all have been duped. If October 7th never happened, I might be wearing an RFK shirt because I thought it was willing enough, you know, to say, okay, these other issues, it was important stuff. And I only got mad at Misty and the guys at RBN, not so much for their position, right? I got mad the way they kind of bagged on people for their positions, right? Like, that's not a way. Like, come on now. At the end of the day, like we said, we'll go talk to these people, standing up in a rally, and you know, it's another thing, but talking to people, let's talk to people, let's talk to people in a proper way. Let's be cool with each other over here. So that's the only thing I got mad at, was the way they had told people in the way. But, you know, at the end of the day, they were also very right. But I can't understand their little, you know, the RBN. I love those guys too. But Jill Stein and that Green Party, no way. That's just a BS, woke-ass party with no serious, you know, I mean, they're on the COVID, what they did. Jill Stein has never still spoken up for the Black Caucus that had those words, and their fact that their steering committee pushed for mandates and lockdowns and nah. She's still not speaking up, and they're still kind of overlooking what COVID really is. They still don't understand it. It's more, you have to be more than saying, I'm just against mandates. No. You got to be against the way the shot comes out, the liability, what's going on, where it came from, how they can lie about it. You know, I'm saying no. About the way society is now rearranged because of this, you know, because of the COVID-19. So there's way more to it. It's about control. You know, it's not, it's more than just a shot or a disease. It's about control. And if you don't get that, you need to get with it and wake up. Even Dr. Cornel West has now said he's willing to have a truth commission to listen to people and see the role that not only, you know, Big Pharma play, but the government in other ways. He's willing to open up and listen. He's now smelling a rat. It took him too long, but he, you know, Jill Stein is not even there, and she's still wearing masks. She was wearing a mask outdoors in February, so I don't want to hear it, you know, with that party over there. Jesus. So, you know, those guys with their Green Party stuff, please, with that party. I'd rather vote for Cornel West if I had to, than Dr. Jill Stein, no, any day of the week.
No, I actually didn't know that about Jill Stein. I just knew that she was correct on a lot of foreign policy issues. I knew she was, you know, obviously a green person, so, you know, very, very concerned with the climate, but to still be wearing a mask in 2024, 2023, or even 2022. Oh my God.
They're so out of touch with the populist, right? They're not the everyday person. Like I said, they're just, you know, the Green Party is a mess, and it's got a lot of work, to go before I would even consider voting for him, even though our elections are crappy anyways.
Yeah, so it's also kind of funny to see this to go back to the populist right when they're so anti-war, but though all of a sudden Maduro gets elected again. And my understanding is, after talking to Anya Parampel, who I had on the show, the elections in Venezuela are actually more secure than the elections here in the U.S. They do paper ballots, if I remember correctly, and they count them all, and it's pretty accurate. You have to show an ID to vote and everything too, if I remember correctly.
Let me break it down for you real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
So it is a DRE machine, direct recorded electronical device. It's like a cash register, a touchscreen screen. But each one of the machines prints out a paper tabulation. It's not necessarily a ballot. It's a tabulation. And remember, they're only voting for one person on that day, the president of Venezuela. Mm-hmm. They don't have to vote for assistant dog catcher of this district. They don't cloud it on purpose. That's part of the whole election system in America to make it more confusing, is to have 50 people to vote for and saying, we need to use computers. Yeah, that's done on purpose. Okay, so they print out a little paper tabulation. You have to have ID to vote. You go to your designated polling spot. You vote. You take the paper out of the machine after you do your touch screen vote, and you put in another ballot box. They'll then open up the ballot box and count 54% of each of the boxes in each precinct and match that up to the machine to make sure it matches up. Now that means 45% is uncounted. That's something they have to work on, I think, as best could be, but it would be really, really hard to cheat. The cheating would have been caught in real time. You'd be able to say, hey, wait a second, why aren't we getting votes here? Because they post the results from each voting machine in front of each door. You know what I'm saying? The chain of custody starts at the door. The people get to witness it. They get to count it. Cheating would have been caught in real time. If you ask anybody, any Trumper out there, especially the ones who've been Elon Musking and pointing out Venezuela has a dictator, even though they couldn't find Venezuela on a map probably a month ago. Really, I mean, this is how ridiculous it is. If you ask any of those people who are involved in election integrity and say, which system would you take, Venezuela's system, our system, if they don't say, I would take Venezuela's system every single day and twice on Sunday, because Sunday is the day you vote and everybody has off, it's a national holiday, then they're lying to you. It's way, way better than our system by far. There is checks and balances. There are areas like 45% of the votes are not counted, right? And they're not matched up to the machine. But that means out of the audit process that the Chavistas would have had to have known which machines were going to be audited and which weren't going to be audited. That's almost impossible. Then they would have had to flip 700,000 votes. 700,000 votes they would have had to flip because they won by 1.4 million, right? That means... Forget about it. Excuse me. They won by 700,000 votes. They would have had to flip like 1.4 million because they would have had to flip them the other way. That's how it goes. I'm doing the math wrong. That is almost damn near impossible. You know, it's a lot sounder of our system than ours. You know, and Venezuela needs to get their shit together. You want to talk about these leftist groups that are haters? This group, the PSL, with their money from Roy Singham, who, you know, was giving so much money to so many other freaking these hardcore leftist socialist groups. Well, they kept a lot of people out, like me and Fiorella and Danny Shaw, you know, and they did it because of whatever reasons, our opinions on COVID that they didn't like. And, you know, and their egos came into play. They needed election integrity activists like ourselves there and let us bring a team so we can prove that their election system was sound. Not just the United States is a fascist country and it's trying to get rid of a socialist, you know, democracy. Like, shut up. But, I mean, Venezuela... system's a lot more sounder than ours. And those people know, they understand that, you know, the empires that listen, when I go to Latin America, and I've been to seven Latin American countries in the last 3 years, Kyle, the number one thing people want, especially around election time, whether it be leftist or conservatives or liberals or whatever you want to call them, all the people, the majority of people, they want their national sovereignty. In other words, they want the United States out. They don't want the United States putting bases up there, stealing their resources, you know, making sure they put the monetary system sanctioning upon them. These crazy loans from the IMF. Every single way you go in Latin America, you can use an American dollar because they make sure it's pegged to their currency. And you know, even the countries that don't have an American presence, like Nicaragua, still has to take those dollars because they got to play ball in the global economy. It's just terrible. Venezuelan system's way better than ours. The people who are talking against it need to shut up because they don't know what they're talking about.
My buddy Conrail here. Some of the best libertarians I know fell for the propaganda on Venezuela, and many of them are hardcore Malay followers, which I'm sure you realize why that's convenient.
It's crazy to me that they're still doing that. Daniel McAdams wrote a little article about what's going on with Malay. He's the furthest thing from a libertarian, and now they're going to have to start going into their own central financial banks to do certain stuff. They've given, you know, assets to English banks. I mean, literally BlackRock has come in there. They've had conversations through and through. You know, he's a hardcore hardcore Zionist, you know, he's all about these, has conversations with Zelensky. I mean, this guy is just a joke. He is the furthest thing from libertarian, and they're just, you know, taking phony articles and posting them up as there's something good. They should read Daniel McAdams' article he wrote on a Substack, and he told these people this is not what's true. That was all about using a client state, which is now Argentina, and getting in the way from BRICS. That's what it's about. He's the furthest thing from a libertarian. Furthest thing, he sold his country out to BlackRock already.
Yeah, I remember when I had Anya on, her and I kind of talked about this, and she had mentioned that basically what Malay had essentially done is basically sell out a lot of the country for IMF loans and, like you said, to BlackRock, rather than saying, okay, well, what a libertarian would do in that situation, say, hey, we're going to deregulate and we're going to let people decide what currency they want to use, and like, hey, if you want to use a dollar, you can use a dollar, Bitcoin, your preferred shit coin, but instead it's, hey, let's take IMF loans and let's fucking basically just throw our autonomy over to the US. And like, you see him taking pictures with Anthony Blinken, one of the worst people on the face of the fucking planet, the dude who's responsible for all of Joe Biden's foreign policy, him and Jake Sullivan, and you're telling me this is some like great libertarian? No,
talking to Zelensky on a regular basis. Get out of here with that.
Yeah, it's absolutely insane. Ryan McMakin from the Institute further vindicated Daniel McAdams on Malaya. Oh, well, you know what? I'll have to check that out. I actually didn't keep up with that. I had Dan McAdams on a while back, right before I had the great Dr. Ron Paul on, and we had talked about Malay. But yeah, it seems like a lot of people are just kind of, I don't know if it's always been like this, because this is just like my, I started podcasting in 2021. So I don't know if like Twitter and the way that people are around election seasons is always just like this hysterical, but like, I don't know how people can't just take an objective view of where we're at. And like the people, Trump saying Kamala is a communist, is like, name one thing that she did that didn't benefit big business or the military industrial complex, because that doesn't sound very communist or socialist to me.
It's ridiculous. And that's the thing. Now it's like, you never hear him talk about power. Remember when in 2016, he's like, that's their donors over there. Their donors there. We couldn't get seats because all their donors here and the deep state is coming after me. And you lied about it's into Iraq. Where's that candidate anymore? He doesn't even mention it. Everything now, they're eating the cats and dogs of the people who live there, which, by the way, you hear all these Republicans crying about the assassination attempt. You have to put that on the shoulders of the Democrats and Hillary Clinton and Kamala Harris for talking so much that they put Donald Trump's life in danger, right? Well, what about his conversations and his talks about eating the cats and doing that about, you know, Haitian people? Is he putting Haitian people's lives in danger? And this whole, like, seeing, like, oh, my God, right? Somebody, you know, a couple people on the left and a couple of libertarians. That was the most egregious I've ever seen any of the moderators on Donald Trump. That's egregious. All these little lame attacks. A guy whose foreign policy is that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are too weak, so I'm going to strong arm. I'm going to let these guys know what they can and cannot do. They would have never had that attack if I was in office. That's your guy whose foreign policy is that he's just going to be stronger and strong arm dictators and leaders, or whatever you want to call these guys, other leaders of other states. That's your, and you're crying about a bunch of ABC moderators. Give me a break. Guy never mentions power anymore. Everything is the immigrants' fault. It's disgusting.
Yeah, I agree. And it's I think it's largely because he's basically bought off now by the Adelson family, Big Pharma, and the CIA. I put out a tweet and I said, basically, this election is the Department of Justice, the FBI, and woke corporations versus the CIA, the Mossad, and then like big tech. That's pretty much what our campaign, or, you know, what the two presidents are representing now at this point.
Yeah, pretty much. He's not the same candidate. You don't rescue the Republic by sheep herding us back into the two-party duopoly. Sorry. Whether you want to admit it or not, Kyle, it's a truth that after these assassination attempts, the loyalty is strengthened. You know, people start, oh, my God, you know what I'm saying? They make him the victim, and you can't deny that. And it's all meant to deceive and distract, right? I mean, I have three questions I wrote down the other day that I'd like to ask Donald Trump. Because nobody's asking him about it. Now they're asking about this assassination attempt. I'd like to ask Mr. Anti-War. He was just stating recently on the Mark Levin show that he was going to leave a base in Afghanistan occupied by American forces. He was never going to pull out in the first place. You know what I'm saying? That's what he was dragging his feet. Why wasn't he standing up with Rand Paul when Rand Paul tried to defund that war on the Senate floor? You didn't hear Donald Trump out there whipping up votes and talking about get on this whole thing. You know, and then all of a sudden now, you know, what part did he play in arming the Ukrainian army? I'd like to know his position on that. I'd like to him answer that. And I also like to know, you know, do you even know what's going on in Haiti right now as you're talking about eating the cats and eating the dogs? As Western corporations are right now currently in the hills of Haiti extracting all the iridium, which is used for like the space shuttle and this rare mineral, iridium. It's being extracted for pennies on the dollar, and the Haitian people are starving and not getting any of those resources benefiting them. Thieves, stealing. And you want to talk about them eating the cats and dogs? Because a couple starving Haitians probably ate a cat or a dog, and you're going to try to paint that on all the people? It's as xenophobic and as racist as can be at this fucking point. Excuse me for cursing. I mean, it's bonkers what we're going through every single day. Cell phones and beepers exploding, and we're okay with this. Nobody's saying anything. This is the type of warfare. Hey, let me tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. Whatever they do abroad, they will eventually come home and use on us. Right now, you got a bunch of Americans labeled domestic terrorists, right? Wait, Gerald Celente said it best. If they did that to your beeper or your pager, imagine what the NSA will do to your cell phone. Imagine what they will do. And nobody's speaking up because, oh, they're terrorists. we're in trouble.
Yeah, I agree. Pretty much anytime I hear somebody say terrorist, I know where they're coming from, because that term to me is basically meaningless at this point, because like you said, they call all of us domestic terrorists, and then pretty much anybody who's a Palestinian, they're a terrorist, right? And that's another one of the Donald Trump's favorite sayings now, is basically anybody who isn't a, you know, dripping wet Zionist is a Palestinian now. Like Joe Biden, the largest recipient of AIPAC aid in the entire country, is a Palestinian. Kamala Harris, whose husband is Jewish and who spoke at AIPAC in 2017, the Palestinian. Chuck Schumer, lifelong, who's also received a lot of money from AIPAC. I think he's in the top five recipients.
He's a Palestinian.
Like, this is our anti-establishment guy, and I still see libertarians falling for this. He's anti-establishment. How? When you have Frank Gaffney, Conroe brought it up. Frank Gaffney, Michael Ledeen, Fred Fleets, Mike Pompeo, all these neocons who are backing Trump. How is he still anti-establishment? I don't see it anymore. You could say all you want about him, you know, bringing up the right talking points about them, quote unquote, trying to assassinate him. But let's be honest, like you said, he served to bring the people back into the two-party establishment and continue to get them to vote. He was the one who always said, oh, they stole the 2020 election off me. And what's the solution for that? Hey, go vote again.
Yeah.
No he doubt. Doesn't believe it was stolen.
Yeah. They haven't even really changed anything too as well, because they still have, if anything, those temporary laws that were put in play. First of all, I was down at the Democratic Convention in Chicago, and I happened to go into a pizzeria, and we caught the HHS Secretary, Health and Human Services Secretary, Xavier Becerra, who decides where all the money from the CARES Act or any of the way it's spent, finances that go from the government through the secretary, and how it's doled out. You know, he's the one who makes sure the people who put the hospitals that put people on ventilators got their bonuses, right? The people who got the positive COVID test so they can pump up the numbers. Using not the antigen test, the other one, CR, the one from Kelly, PCR, the PCR test, when they still use that, right? And we're still funding the CDC and all these other groups to say, go ahead, keep using that test, even though we know it's not good. It's going to give us a bunch of false positives. I don't care. That guy, and I asked him, I said, hey, man, with the monkeypox going on right now and the WHO declaring it a global pandemic, is that going to affect us, and is it going to affect our election? And he was like, oh, well, this is worse than COVID-19, I'm concerned, and we've been working with the WHO and helping them out, giving them vaccines and yada yada yada, but it's worse than the COVID. I said, wait, isn't it a sexually transmitted disease? No, contact. So he's saying it's worse than COVID. He's saying that it's done by contact, and he's saying it's fearful if it hits the shores. Nothing has really changed in the election system, and this can happen again. The same way they use COVID, in which they illegally change laws, because it says in our Constitution only the state legislation can change the election laws. Well, you had election officials and governors and secretaries of state illegally changing rules to make it easier to cheat. Nothing has changed. And in those certain areas, those temporary laws, Kyle, like in Nevada, like in Arizona, like in Wisconsin, some of those temporary laws have been made permanent now. In Nevada, right. And this is what they say, we're stopping illegal immigrants from voting. They're not voting. They're being exploited for a ballot. In Arizona, in Clark County, Nevada, where I lived, I'm going to speak about that. Yeah. Let's give that as an example. They have vote centers, which means you don't have to go to a specific place, which means that your election is now impossible to audit. They have ballot harvesting, which means you can bring in multitudes of ballots wherever you want. They have automatic registration. And automatic registration for a new license and a renewal. So if you go to renew your license or you go to get a new license, in which they let illegal immigrants, or I'm sorry for saying that word for those people out there, undocumented workers or immigrants or however you want to refer to that person who's not a United States citizen, well, a ballot will be distributed. They then shotgun out all those ballots, mail-in ballots. About 85-90% of the people that are registered to vote in Clark County and in Maricopa County, Arizona, get a ballot a month beforehand. Damn. So it doesn't even touch the immigrant. He says, send it back, put it there. There are people who go around and collect it. There are people who grab them out of the trash. There's people who do all that stuff because then they can get that ballot into a nefarious hand and vote. Right. These rules are still in play. And what are the Republicans doing? They're blaming the immigrant when the immigrant is not even going in and voting. He's being exploited for his ballot or his or her ballot. That's what's going on. And they're doing that too as well. This is how nefarious it is. They're doing this. This is what Catherine Austin Fitz talked about it, right? They're doing this because they want to put you on digital IDs. And they're going to say the only way to stop immigrants from voting is put you on a digital ID. Now they got you track and trace all over the place. That is what is going on. And that's what's going on with Trump and his campaign and what they're talking about. They are so missing what's going on. They want to make you believe that the immigrant, not the ruling class, not the oligarch, is the biggest problem. What's going to happen when he picks up 5 million illegal immigrants that you call them and deport them? Well, that's going to save us. Now we can go out and pick fruit and clean pools and mow grass and be nanny. It's not going to change. Industry hasn't changed. We have no industry here. We don't make anything. We don't fix anything. Nobody's addressing the real problems, especially the Trump campaign. So you're an idiot to even support this guy or vote for him or even go out and shill for him. It's disgusting.
Yeah. Yeah. And it, like you said, they never go after the powerful anymore, where Trump was absolutely right. And like, I kind of thought about this a little bit more recently. Like if I was a little bit more clued in back in 2016, I probably would have voted for Trump because he was saying a lot of the right stuff. But then, I mean, that was really like the strongest case for him. After that, it's like, oh, he just kind of decided, oh, I'm just going to go along to get along rather than actually like, hey, let's actually address some of this stuff. But really what it is, let's get the boot off Americans' necks, right? You know, like let people work how they want to work. And once again, like you said, these jobs may be taken up by immigrants. It's because Americans don't want to do these jobs. And I get into conversations with some of the more hard right guys, and they say, well, basically, we should have tariffs to bring jobs back home because people are always going to choose the cheap Chinese stuff. I'm like, well, then, I mean, that's what people choose. We cannot, you really can't control what people are going to choose to buy or not buy. You as an individual can buy American made stuff and you'll find, hey, maybe the quality is good. Maybe the quality sucks. You don't know until you buy it. But I still think people should have that choice because once again, people are going to do what they're going to do. And I think it's better that we have trade with other countries rather than not have trade with other countries. Cause the old saying goes, once again, if goods don't cross borders, then soldiers do.
Yeah. Hey, the thing is we can have more personal food growth. We can have infrastructure right now, which we desperately need to give a lot of people jobs. We got to find something right away to tape it up. Like I said, we don't make anything anymore. We don't fix anything. And those tariffs don't work. The Chinese were dragging their feet and moving their a lot of factories out of their own country. Like, you know, our workers making a lot more nowadays anyways. And we, you know, the wages are getting so high in China, even for, you know, the manufacturing, we should move to Vietnam, Cambodia, Mexico. That's what they did. We're going to find out who they are. We're going to ban them with tariffs. They're going to just pass that tariff expense on over to the people. You know what I'm saying? We got to listen.
Every single paper shows that. Yeah. Every single one.
We got to figure out a way in which we can save our country through some industry here. We got to do something. We're not doing anything anymore. We have a service-based economy. Most people work for an app. You know, it's ridiculous. They're just delivering food and we have a lot of problems right now. And the fact that we're wasting all our money, like you said, foreign policy, where's our money going? It's being spent over there, right? Immigration, so many of them people coming because we're forcing them because we're over there. Yeah. Occupying their land, stealing their resources, taking their stuff out of the ground. And they're following it here, hoping to get a little trickle down. You know what I'm saying? I mean, really, that's we're going to put that on them. You know, and also the fact that he's trying to blame every single Muslim or, you know, every single person coming across the border as someone, you know, mischievous and dangerous. And I mean, we could talk about this for hours, can't we? Please.
Yeah. It's always, oh, you know, they're sending over terrorists and sleeper cells. Like, this is like 2001 neocon propaganda when you're saying that there's going to be sleeper cells here in America. Like, look, if they can figure out where people were on January 6th and all this stuff, believe me, they will have no issue tracking these people down if they were an actual threat and putting a bullet in their skull. If they're an actual threat to, you know, any kind of power or the government or anything like that. But we are in zero fucking danger of anything like that actually happening because, once again, the surveillance that they have, I promise you that they're going to find out what's going on. And yeah, I definitely agree with the, you know, there's so many fucking problems and none of them are being talked about. And it was kind of nice, like you said earlier, that RFK was kind of bringing some of this stuff to light, but a shame that he eventually folded just to basically get his foot in the door where he's probably not really going to do anything. So, yeah, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think that's probably a good place to wrap it there. Craig Pastajardula, my man.
I don't know. What part of Florida are you going down to?
Oh, yeah. The wife and I will be in Orlando. I can't fucking wait. We're going to Brazilian Steakhouse the night that we get in. I can't wait.
Gotcha, man. O-Town, baby. Have fun up there, please, dude. Thanks again for letting me come on your show. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, for sure. Why don't you let everybody know where you're at? And before you do that, I will be having a stream Friday. I'll send you over a link. It's going to be Anti-Imperialist People. Misty and Connor Freeman are going to be on. If you're free Friday, 8 p.m. Eastern time, you're more than welcome to con. If not, I understand. But yeah, let everybody know where they could find you and all that good stuff.
At Yo Pasta, find the links to get me where you got to go. I got a show called Pasta 2 Go. That's the number 2 and go. You can do one word. It's on YouTube. It's on Rumble. We have a Twitter. Also, I do the Convo Couch here and there. Whenever Fiorella gets some time to do so. And I've been collaborating a lot with a guy named Matt Wineglass from the Homeless Left. We'll be doing a kind of dual stream tomorrow, Thursday. And I'm always on Sputnik Radio throughout the week. Sometimes I just did finish up doing the Rick Sanchez show, Deep Direct Impact. It was awesome down in Fort Lauderdale and down in Miami. It was a lot of fun doing that. So that show was up. So, yeah, you can find me where you find me, baby.
Nice, man. All right. Well, yeah, if you don't got anything else, everybody, thank you so much for listening. And until next time, take care.
Lowe's knows you've got a job to do, and we help get it done. With the MyLowe's Pro Rewards program, eligible members save more with volume discounts on qualifying orders through a quote of $2,000 or more. Join for free today. Lowe's, we help you save. Offer can't be combined with any other discount, contract, and or special pricing. Exclusions, more terms, and restrictions apply. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.